There are children in remote parts of Australia who know all about long school journeys, but I dare say nothing quite compares to the school run that we're about to take you on this morning. You might have seen a story on ABC Online this week with some terrific pictures of this remote part of the Himalayas, where children determined to get an education take an incredible and almost unimaginable route to school. Perched in the attic of India, high in the remote mountains of Jammu and Kashmir, is the village of Zanskar. Getting children to school there involves a perilous journey, trekking several days down the Zanskar River, a frozen highway of sorts, known by locals as the Shadar, which means white sheet in Hindi. It's certainly a far cry from the usual 8 a.m. drop-off in Australia's inner cities and towns. Well, joining us from India's capital is the ABC's South Asia correspondent, James Bennett, who filed that story this week. But also with us is Tamara Cannon, the founder of an organisation which sponsors the education of more than 100 children in that community. Tamara and James, welcome to Sunday Extra.
Hi, Hamish.
Hi, Hamish.
James, let me start with you. Paint a picture for us. Exactly how remote is this area? We're talking about Ladakh. It's, I guess, the lesser known part of Kashmir, certainly internationally.
It is, but it's an incredibly evocative one, Hamish, because you're absolutely right. It's incredibly remote, but the mountains are just a sight to behold. It really is a part of India which is so far removed from the urban experience, and that those images of crowds and bustle and pollution and all of the challenges that a country with a population of 1.3 billion people has. This is an area where the peaks seem to stretch upwards for miles. There are glaciers around every corner, and there are very few people compared to the rest of the country. It is not perhaps enormous in distance as the crow flies, but with those mountains, the geography and the difficulty of getting between any of these places is just absolutely immense, as you mentioned in the introduction. It's just really, really difficult to imagine how long it can take to cover even a few mere kilometres. You know, for us on the journey that I undertook with Tamara and the Lilifro crew, it was 2 days of travel to go essentially around one mountain range from one valley across into another. Quite a journey, but also one which can test the patience, and you know, and we're doing it in the relative comfort of a vehicle.
Tell us what it's like flying into Leh or wherever it is that you flew into. I've flown up there a number of times myself, and it always strikes me as like it's like landing on a different planet when you've taken off from somewhere else in India.
It is indeed, and that's absolutely remarkable, because to fly into Leh, which is the regional capital of the Ladakh area, coming from Delhi, you leave a flat, polluted plain, then within an hour, you're up in these incredible mountain peaks and looking down over glaciers and coming into a landscape which is jagged and rugged and almost moon-like in its dryness. It is a very sparsely vegetated area, but incredibly beautiful in its own remote and very, very distinct way.
Nothing like getting there on a pretty bouncy budget airline. Tamara, tell us about Zanskar.
Well, Zanskar is one of the most sparsely populated regions in Ladakh. Ladakh is a high-altitude desert, essentially. And unlike the rest of India, as James was saying, I guess the main challenges up there is poverty, geography and isolation. So Zanskar for us is really the core of where we work, the Lilifro Foundation, which I started back in 2008. Our focus is on reaching the bottom rung of poverty in the most remote places, essentially, on Earth. So in this particular region, we found that while there was access to education, the children had nowhere to live. So this is what started this particular project at the end of the Ice River.
Tell me how you came to be there in the first place. You're a successful Aussie corporate lawyer. The Ladakh region is not the most obvious place for someone to end up.
No. And, you know, in my wildest dreams, I would never have pictured myself in this part of the world. Being a corporate lawyer for about 10 years, I decided that I reached a point where I'd stopped learning. So I literally took my foot off the pedal and decided to just take a break. And I was working on my own business project out of Hong Kong. And like all, you know, crazy Australians, I had that moment where I thought, you know, I don't have a desk job to go back to. Where should I go? So I closed my eyes, pointed to a map, and it landed on Mount Everest. So
you've got a very ambitious forefinger.
Yeah, it could have landed in the Bahamas, but no, I do like challenges, and this was the start of something a bit larger than that.
So this Shadar school trek, when did you first do it? How did you come across it and end up participating?
Well, the Shadar, as it's known for the locals, is the only road in and out of Zanska during the winter months. So for about 8 months each year, Zanska is so remote, it's cut off from the rest of the world by snow, which blocks the roads and high passes. So when I did go back to India, I really wanted to know where that bottom rung of poverty lived, and it's the type of poverty that really kills. I was simply told you can't get into this part of the world because it's a restricted area. As it happened, I was granted permission by the Indian government to access this particular area where no foreigner had ever been before. And that opened up really our ability to work with alongside some of the lowest income groups and nomadic groups. And on the flip side, I was told that in the Zanska region, a lot of the communities were cut off by snow, so their ability to access the education system was hindered for a number of other reasons. So that's how I ended up in this particular region. And, you know, as first learners in the communities, the parents were very reluctant to send them to school far away. For those of our sponsor kids that did want to board in the capital of Ladakh, which is Leh, their journey to school is along this frozen ice river. And that's fantastic, except that, you know, the perils that come with travelling alongside one of the most dangerous walks to school is, they're very obvious.
James, a lot of journalists based in India end up in Kashmir, but on the Srinagar side. How did you find this story and find yourself trying to tell us this particular tale?
I'd met Tamara when I arrived in India back in 2015 through a mutual friend. And then, you know, she got telling me about this story and this part of the landscape. And it was one of these things which I was enchanted with straight away. I remember, you know, going away from that dinner and doing a bit of research on the place and seeing some of these landscapes and starting to do as you do and trying to plot out how this might be possible. And you know, you come to the conclusion that, of course, you know, there's a day in flying up here, and then you'd need to get a vehicle from one place across to there, and you start thinking about how you then haul all of your camera equipment up some of these smaller tracks that are, you know, well beyond what a vehicle can do. And pretty quickly, by the time you realise that it includes, you know, it must include some time for altitude acclimatisation and all of these things, it becomes really difficult, because it becomes, you know, quite a number of days investment to get to this area, and really, you know, quite some time to get a story, which, you know, obviously now, I mean, you can see the results. It's pictorially incredibly rich. I mean, the characters in it were just wonderful, amazing people to meet. But it was a couple of years' perseverance, Hamish,
I suspect it would have been some intriguing pitching processes there at the ABC to get that story up.
Indeed, you can well imagine what it was like. And in the end, it was a wonderful combination of timing where I got back in touch with Tamara and worked out that she was going to be going up there just at the time that I was actually going to be finishing a personal trip and finishing a trip that I was doing up there with my father on bicycles. So I was able to say to work, look, I'll already be up there. I'll already be acclimatised. You've only got to pay for a flight one way. It's going to be several days, and I think we can pull this off. And we managed.
Tamara, take us on this school route. There are kids younger than 10, some of them being piggybacked. Just how dangerous is it?
Well, it depends, Hamish, on the time of the year. So this particular river, once it freezes over, has become one of the hottest destinations for crazy trekkers in the world. And I think it was listed by Lonely Planet in their top 10. So in January, that's when you see the river completely overcrowded with tourists. Unfortunately for our kids, that's created a very fragile environment for them. They return back to school in March. So it's well and truly when the river is starting to thaw out, and it's less predictable than it is definitely in January when the throngs of tourists are having a go walking along it. it. I've done that twice, and you know, this is equipped in some of the best mountain gear you can get your hands on, and amazing sleeping bags. But for our sponsor kids, you know, they're living on some of them come from families, and I know the family that James interviewed are earning 26 cents a day and trying to feed, you know, five mouths with that. So they really don't have the financial means to you know, buy proper shoes or be able to do it in any way that's anything remotely comfortable.
It's an incredible amount of risk for a young person to take on. I assume it doesn't always end well necessarily, but how do the families make that judgment about the value of taking that risk?
Well, the families are just so desperate for an education that this shows that they really will go to any extreme just to, you know, get their children into school and provide them with a different quality of life that, as parents in their circumstance, they didn't have the opportunities, they've never been to school. So for them, it's a huge privilege and it's an honour. The story that James witnessed was one of our sponsor kids. His mother's mentally challenged. He lives with his grandparents and little baby sister. His grandfather is, so James was 75 years old?
76
to be precise. Yeah. And his job was taking his grandson every year along this charter to school. So for him, it was a 5-day journey. And again, they don't have the, you know, the mittens and the waterproof gear that we certainly did. And he's having to carry enough food to feed his grandson along the trip, to be able to light fires every night. And for the locals, they sleep in caves on the side of this river. So it's really very challenging. Some of our children are as young as 3. We have one little boy who's a 3.5-year-old orphan, and he also makes this journey every year. And the first time he did that was with us. So I carried him on my back on the way to school, and for the rest of it, we pulled him along on a sled. But it is treacherous, and you know, it's very difficult knowing where to put your foot. And the locals test the ice with a big stick made of willow, and you can actually hear from the sound of the ice how thick it is and whether it's going to be safe enough for you to put your foot down. But you know, the river changes every hour, and even when we were filming, we went back to document it to try and raise money for the boarding house that we're building. When we went back, you know, one of my colleagues, Matt, he was ahead filming, and by the time I got to him with the kids, you know, the river had changed and we were all of a sudden stuck. So that's it's not uncommon for the army to get called in and try and haul communities out of, you know, areas where they've been blocked, and it is really dangerous. So
have they lost many people?
Yes. Well, I do know from our own Lilfro beneficiaries that a lot of the families that we support, they're either single parents or orphans, because they lose, you know, a parent to avalanches or, you know, other rock slides and things like that. So it's a very fragile environment and, you know, very unpredictable.
James, finally, working across South Asia, I think one of the things that is most noticeable is the lengths that kids go to get an education. There is a value placed on education that's almost inconceivable to us. Is that something you've noticed in your work there for the ABC?
Absolutely, Hamish. Yeah, it's these things that we take for granted, as you say, you know, the arguments that you hear amongst families about time to, you know, to go and play outside or play video games, and then, you know, to see something like this, the lengths that people will go to, meeting, you know, one of these young boys in Sering's grandson, who he had taken a couple of times down the ice river, and, you know, just asking him that really basic question of, you know, of what would you like to be, and he answered straight away that he'd love to be a pilot, and seeing his grandfather, you know, watching him read and recite a few things, and then going and filming them outside, just doing a couple of basic chores, you know, realizing that vast gulf between the opportunity that we have, and you know, the outcomes that, you know, even those who do get an education in some parts of this country have, you know, it really does, it's quite touching. It definitely hits home. And, you know, it was really great to sort of do this story, because it's sort of part of the positive side of this is the work that Tamara is doing to try and get more access to a boarding house and better teachers up into this area, which will make a real difference, I think, to some of these kids.
All right. James Bennett, the ABC South Asia correspondent in Delhi, and Tamara Cannon from Lilfro, the organisation that's supporting kids in the Zanskar community. Thank you very much for coming in this morning.
Thanks, Hamish.
Thanks, Hamish.